So what we have done is we've taken our agenda item 5 from yesterday's meeting, which is a report by our State Water Resources Control Board liaison, Stephen Moore, and we've moved it into this time slot. So, Mr. Moore, if you would like to give us your report, we'd love to listen to you.
Well, good morning, Chair Young, members of the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board and staff and residents of the region. I'm Stephen Moore, board member of the State Water Resources Control Board, and privileged to be liaison to this great region of the state. In wishing you a good morning, I thought I'd just give you my normal liaison report. I know you have an important item to attend to today, so it won't take too long, but give you a sense of what's happening in, at the State Water Board, and with a focus on items of interest to the Central Coast Water Board. I always organize my talks according to budget issues and then activities of the State Board recently conducted and to be conducted soon, upcoming issues, and then I'll wrap up with some legislative updates. So to begin with, on the budget, this budgeting time of year, on May 9th, the State Water Board's budget change proposals were approved by both houses of the state legislature without much controversy at all. There, the 8 items related to items such as wastewater operator certification, small disadvantaged community wastewater projects, water recycling augmentation, water rights program augmentation. There's a lot of interest in the legislature to make sure that the water rights program is administered effectively, efficiently, but also that enforced. It's an ongoing topic of discussion in Sacramento. Other items approved were alignments in the underground tank cleanup fund, the orphan site cleanup fund, the RUST program, which I'll talk about at the end of the legislation, and timber harvest plans and other technical bond adjustments. So I think it's relatively good news that the legislature looked favorably on the increased budget proposals that the State Water Board made across the board. During the legislative budget approval process, there was much discussion of the nitrates in drinking water issue. And additional funding to the state water boards and regional water boards are discussed in several areas. These have not been approved, but the issues have come up and are being followed up on. The Senate, for instance, has requested that the administration return to the Senate with a proposal to elevate the drinking water program by shifting it to Cal EPA, either as a separate cabinet under the Secretary of Cal EPA or within the State Water Board. That's the drinking water, the Division of Drinking Water currently housed under the California Department of Public Health.
And that's a Senate proposal?
The Senate request to the administration. They wanted budget language requiring well logs to be made public and to have a 2014 budget proposal to address concerns about permanent solutions to the nitrate groundwater contamination issue. The Assembly requested placeholder language for budget to authorize 7 positions in the water boards to increase the oversight and enforcement of the state's laws and regulations dealing with agricultural wastewater dischargers. That's just the report that I'm reading back. Mm-hmm. So the Assembly and Senate have shown heightened interest in this issue.
And Steve,
in a budget framework.
The wells, the logs that would be made public, are those both private and, I guess, public wells would be made public anyway? Or
I don't have really details on that discussion. This is sort of, this is a summary of the issue. So I think that's one of the details that would have to be sorted through.
We've been grappling with some of the issues about what kinds of data can be made public ourselves,
right,
with our own ag order. So do you have any sense for, does this include the smallest well with the fewest number of connections up to the maximum?
Yes, I the sense I have is that there aren't exclusions at this time, that would be a discussion, you know, that would be forthcoming. So it's more generic in terms of if a well is being used for drinking water, that the logs of that well ought to be made public. A general, you know, principle that's being discussed. And then in addition on the budget issues, the Senate has indicated that it will likely request an augmentation of the beach monitoring program for recreation beaches. Right, currently, this beach monitoring program statewide is funded at $1 million per year. But in the Senate Bill 482 that authorized the program, there's a cap of $1.8 million. And so the proposal that may come forward through the finalization of this year's budget could be to raise the funding for beach monitoring from $1 million to $1.8 million per year from now until 2016. So that's on the table. So as you can hear, the budget, the general flavor for the discussions is to increase the budgets of the water boards. Activities. I haven't reported to you since late January. It's been a while since we've connected in this forum. But recent items that the state water boards worked on since late January haven't revolved necessarily around the Central Coast region. But you may recall in January I reported that we were about to adopt the statewide municipal stormwater permit for Phase 2 communities, population 10,000 to 100,000. And we did adopt that statewide permit on February 5th. I think it's worth noting, among many other programs, it established minimum post-construction stormwater requirements, mostly related to low-impact development principles, such as numeric sizing criteria for new development in terms of infiltration requirements. And so in doing this, the State Water Board has set up a structure, a regulatory structure, that I, as a board member, believe is important to set expectations statewide for a minimum level of post-construction stormwater management, you know, recognizing what a profound impact things like curbs and gutters and rooftops and directly connected impervious surfaces have on ambient water quality. And these principles don't just apply in drainage engineering that's done in the cities, but also in agricultural areas or other areas where humans have changed the way water moves across the landscape. So these principles, I believe, represent a 21st century awakening on drainage management in all aspects. And so I think it's an important component. The State Water Board has implemented statewide in kind of a minimum standards setting. I'd like to point out that we explicitly recognize in this order the Central Coast Regional Water Board's efforts, and I would say leadership, to explore refinements in the infiltration requirements that would be suited to specific basins to maximize water resource efficiency and protection. I believe this is a good example of statewide consistency that allows regional flexibility, which is a hallmark of our water board system. So I think, you know, we worked through some details, State Water Board, Regional Water Board, on this issue, and I was pleased with the outcome. I thought both of the statewide and the regional interests were well represented, and I think the stakeholders believe that as well from the feedback I received. Now, upcoming activities. Folks may have heard a rumor that State Water Board will be in the Central Coast region soon, and it's true. Next Tuesday, June 4th, the State Water Board is coming to the Central Coast region and holding its regularly scheduled board meeting in Monterey, California, at the Monterey Institute of International Studies in the McCone Irvine Auditorium. This is located at 499 Pierce Street in Monterey. And then on Wednesday, some State Water Board members will tour the San Clemente Dam Removal Project at 9:15 a.m., starting at the Carmel Valley Village in Carmel Valley. And the details of these meetings are on our website. So, obviously, it's a meeting upcoming, and I can't comment extensively on it, but I'd like to go ahead and let you know what the items are on the agenda, if you'll bear with me. The State Water Board decided to hold its meeting in Monterey to address three major items that affect the residents and local agencies, stakeholders of the Monterey Peninsula area, related mostly to water supply. The first item will be a presentation by the California American Water Company, known as Cal-AM, and the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. This will be regarding compliance with the State Water Board Order 2009-60. And to give you a quick overview of 2009-60, which is a pretty major statewide order, it requires Cal-AM to cease and desist from unauthorized diversions of water from the Carmel River in accordance with a schedule and conditions. At the time of the order, Cal-AM was diverting 10,978 acre-feet per year. Okay, so you got the number 10,978 from the Carmel River. And Cal-AM has legal rights to 3,376 acre-feet per year. So the order implements a graduated water diversion reduction schedule to a diversion amount of 9,318 acre-feet per year in water year 2015-2016. So we're going down from 10,978 to 9,318, but then a large reduction to 3,376 acre-feet per year by December 31st, 2016. That's a big jump. The order also implemented a moratorium on providing Carmel River water to new service connections or to increased water use at existing service addresses resulting from a change in zoning or a change in use. And the order requires quarterly compliance reports to be filed with the State Water Board and posted on Cal-AM's website. So that's the first item. The second item will be a workshop on the State Water Board's revised draft report to the California Public Utilities Commission, which was requested by the CPUC in September 2012. This report examines the legal and technical considerations associated with the Cal-AM proposal to extract desalination feed water for the Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project. Written comments on this report were received May 3rd and are posted on our website. So this is an issue of legal and technical feasibility of the current proposal by the Monterey Peninsula agencies to enact a water supply project that will provide water supply in lieu of the reductions required by the State Water Board on the Carmel River. And then finally, the third major item affecting the Monterey Peninsula area is an informational item on the desalination and brine disposal amendments for the California Ocean Plan and the Enclosed Bays, Estuaries, and Inland Surface Waters Water Quality Control Plan. So this is this other element that profoundly affects this major water supply challenge. This has been an item that I've given you periodic updates, and actually I saw a very good technical presentation that you received back in July, almost a year ago, about desalination technical issues. We're making progress on the amendments to the ocean plan and also the inland plans. And we can think of it as addressing three issues, developing amendments to these plans to address the desalination intake and the brine discharge. And so those are two kind of overarching issues, but there are three components. There's a narrative objective proposed for salinity. There's limits on desalination intakes. And then third, an implementation plan for discharges, including a provision prohibiting the use of flow augmentation for in-plant dilution. Our draft amendments are based on three scientific studies that addressed, first, intakes and then the mitigation for intake impacts. Number two, brine's disposal. And then number three, a very good concise hypersalinity toxicity study that was conducted out of Moss Landing Marine Lab by folks that have helped us for years on toxicity issues in marine environments. Representatives from each of these studies presented their results and recommendations at a workshop in Sacramento on August 22nd last year. And industry and environmental groups also attended the workshop and provided a lot of feedback. And also, as I reported last time, January 30th, there was an industry-sponsored technical meeting that was attended by stakeholders, scientific community, industry, and environmental groups. And our staff attended that meeting and refined policy proposals based on that input. So what's the policy issue here? The amendments are needed because there are currently no water quality objectives for elevated salinity in receiving waters in the ocean plan. So there's a big issue there that must be addressed as we move forward statewide in various desalination proposals, not just in Monterey Peninsula. There are no provisions specifically addressing brine waste discharges from seawater desalination plants, groundwater desalination plants, or water recycling treatment plants. In addition, there are no statewide provisions implementing a California Water Code section, which is 13142.5B, but this requires that the best site design, technology, and mitigation measures feasible shall be used to minimize the intake and mortality of all forms of marine life resulting from industrial seawater and estuarine intakes. So there's a state law we need to comply with. The proposed amendment will provide clear and consistent requirements to control seawater and estuarine intakes to prevent impingement, where marine life is actually forced against a screen and stuck and suffers mortality. So that's supposed to be absolutely prevented. And then also to minimize entrainment of marine life. So these are the three matters that will be discussed in detail at our meeting next Tuesday. And I think I'll move along. I don't know if you want to ask any questions, or maybe ask questions next Tuesday.
Dr. Wolf.
Yeah. Does this also dovetail into the once-through cooling issue on power plants?
Yes, it does dovetail. There are a lot of similar issues. From a technical standpoint, the flow rates are order of magnitude, or very much higher with once through cooling processes compared to desalination. So the quantity of water is different, but the issues are similar in terms of technical specifications on minimum screen size, maximum velocity to protect marine life. These type of issues come up, and so there's a lot in common. And as you very much know, a lot of proposals for desalination, one of the criteria is there an existing intake that they can, from an economic standpoint, benefit from. They tend to be associated with cooling.
Thank you.
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. Mr. Moore. And following on Jean-Pierre's interest in the connection or the linkages between once-through cooling and desalination, there is also, in the past, there's been a lot of discussion about the co-siting of these types of operations and kind of creating a dependency of the desal operation with once-through cooling, relying on ocean water for cooling. Is that an issue that has been resolved, or where is that in the pipeline, if you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very central issue, given that the State Water Board has been fairly clear in its policy development in the last few years about once-through cooling being a technology that is going to be phased out because of its unacceptable impacts on marine life. So that's a central issue, is how much are, you know, the thing to avoid is to sort of grandfather in dated technology when better cooling technology is available that's more sustainable. So we'll be wanting to look at that. We don't want to enable the continuance of an outdated technology.
Question I have for you. You may know, you may not know. I'm kind of curious about how the water agency that was allocated 3,500 acre feet or so got up to 10,000 acre feet.
I think it was 14,000 in 1995.
Right? Was the State Board aware of these additional diversions as they were happening, or did this just happen and they learned about it later?
That's a good
question. I don't want to expose any skeletons and closets, but are there repercussions?
Well, I think, you know, given that I've only been a State Board member for 1 year, okay. I don't know the whole history. But I guess what the story, if you will, okay. Is that the diversions were happening from a subterranean section of the Carmel River through wells that were in the alluvial plain. So an issue had to be resolved historically, decades ago, about the question of whether these shallow groundwater wells were river diversions or if they were a groundwater basin diversion, a legal point. That's one part of the whole story.
So on its face, they were taking the 3,500 from the river itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
And then the additional was
Is that
from the ground, and so it was a gray area as to whether this was part of the river flow or not.
Right.
Yeah. Can I add?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. They do have a diversion point that's much higher up in the river, and that's a structure and allowed them to divert. But the problem became truly apparent as the river dried up earlier and earlier in the lower river basin because of these wells that were adjacent to the river.
Right.
So they had to sort out determine the underflow that was being drawn out.
Right.
One of the major incentives to really pay attention to this is because of the threatened steelhead that are a specific ecological unit to the Carmel. And so that brought in NOAA and a lot of concern and fines that Cal-Am has received over time and considerable amount of money set up for fish rearing and all kinds of mitigation for this. But the water rights issue took the longest, I think, to resolve. And the problem now is the dependency of the region for its water from the Carmel.
Mm-hmm.
And so replacing it is where the desal comes in.
Right. Yeah. I do remember this has been an issue that has come before us, and I was aware of the problem with the steelhead, I think being kind of trapped and not being able to move upstream because of a lack of flow. But I was just curious as to how this was kind of how it happened over time that this additional flow was taken.
And then there are private wells that have been added, and it is an agricultural area.
Right.
In the lower river basin.
Okay.
So more and more straws going in. So
right.
Cal-Am's impact became more and more obvious.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Moore, very much.
Good. Yeah, I've got a few more things. If we don't mind. But yeah, that's very much the big item. There are many other water rights holders in the Carmel Valley River Basin, and actually our division has approved some water rights applications in the last couple of years. So it's an active area. And so going on with the flow of my report, just wanted to reiterate some things going on that affect the region. We, in addition to dealing with regulatory issues, the State Water Board deals with funding. And on March 21st, we approved $125,000 in small community grant funds for the Davenport County Sanitation District. That's located a little north of Santa Cruz, for planning financing for their recycled water feasibility study. And a week earlier in March, we approved $62,500 in grant funding from the Water Recycling Facilities Planning Grant Program for the City of Pacific Grove, small water project study. So there are a couple of items in the region that have received funding. And then, as you know, I think we have some agreement based on some conversations I've had with you all, but and it relates a little to this item 12 you had yesterday, where you approved a basin plan amendment related to the statewide plan for the septic, or statewide policy, excuse me, for the septic tanks and systems policy, known as the on-site waste treatment, or OTS, O-W-T-S. And that's... It wasn't necessarily, as I understand, because I wasn't here yet yesterday, but it wasn't a highly controversial item. And I'm glad to hear that because, you know, we went through 12 years of process responding to a state law to get the regulation of septic systems in the state consistent, having a floor. And I was concerned even when we adopted it in June last year that this would create a lot of additional work for the regions. That's not how I would hope the process would work, that the statewide consistency would be established through State Water Board action and then more or less administratively updated in basin plans around the state. It's a good system. It really provides a floor and a level of accountability through local agency management programs. And so... And that's in my experience as a regional board member in Region 2, San Francisco Bay Region. It's a system that's worked there, and it just didn't happen to work everywhere in the state. So it was a good outcome. I congratulate you on a smooth item 12 yesterday. But it relates to what I believe is a positive development at the State Water Board to try to take it, the regional board's input, but develop statewide policies and plans that facilitate implementation at the regions. So we really, as your liaison, I want to emphasize that as you look at our list, it's in every executive director's report, which come out every month or every other month. We have a long table at the end that has all of the statewide initiatives we're working on. So, you know, statewide WDR for composting facilities is under discussion. The issue of updating freshwater bacteria objectives for swimming in freshwater systems around the state. Not something really appropriate for each region to take on individually 9 times. So we have a long list of those things that we continue to work on and continue to emphasize the need for your staff, experts, to engage in those statewide policy and plan developments. So in legislation... next week's also a couple of items of interest. There are hearings at the Assembly Water Parks and Wildlife Committee of the State Assembly has asked that the State Water Board, Regional Water Boards, and the Delta Water Master testify at a hearing on Tuesday. So while we're in Monterey, there's a hearing on effective freshwater protection and enforcement. and California Department of Food and Agriculture will be there as well. It will focus on the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. The committee seems particularly focused on the enforcement of the program by the regional water boards. And they've indicated that water quality impairment of groundwater basins is constricting the state's overall freshwater supply, particularly in areas either partially or completely groundwater dependent and where there are high concentration of nitrates from fertilizers in the aquifer. The committee would like to better understand what kind of accurate data on nitrogen fertilizer use is available and how that is being incorporated and enforced in the Irrigated Lands Program. So the Assembly Parks and Wildlife Committee is very direct in their language, and so we're going to attend this as well as staff from the Central Valley Regional Water Board. From our staff, Darren Polemus will be testifying. He is currently the head of the Division of Administrative Services, but was a manager in the Division of Water Quality and also worked on a farm of 9,000 acres for many years. And then, so that's a very active issue in Sacramento in terms of discussion and relates to all the hard work you're doing in this region. And June 5th, Wednesday, there's another hearing. The Select Committee on Coastal Protection has asked the State Water Board to testify about marine pollution quantification, and specifically about major sources of products and categories that affect marine environments in California, and even more specifically, the issue of marine plastic debris. And so our staff will attend this meeting and discuss how issues such as what's the baseline, how we can monitor progress, why is plastic marine debris worth doing something about, who, how, when, for how long have we been collecting data on marine debris, how is it analyzed, and what is the data telling us about plastics in the Pacific Ocean. So there are, as I've reported to you before, there are legislative proposals about things like banning plastic bags statewide from grocery stores because they're a major, they show up in marine and estuarine environments in our state and have deleterious impacts. And so, this issue is another hot statewide topic, in terms of products we use and dispose of. Yes?
If I might... there is one thing that's come to my attention in my interest in marine protected areas. I was inquiring to State Board staff about the nitrate discharge standard. What is the numeric, any kind of metrics on that? And I was told there's not. And so since we know that some of our surface water discharges to the ocean. Many of those, at least in the Central Coast region, actually discharge to a marine protected area where these are locations, and I know you're aware of them, these are areas that have been identified as critical habitat for marine species. And so the question I have is, where in the list of issues in terms of marine pollution do you see or hear the discussion on looking at nitrate impacts mm-hmm. to marine, especially nearshore environments?
Interesting question. It relates to two things. We're going to do an amendment to the Ocean Plan about the Marine Life Protection Act, the MPAs, the Marine Protected Areas around the state. A lot of effort went into that, a lot of stakeholder input. And we're folding that into our ocean plan through this surface water quality protection area designation. And I think I reported to you all about that last fall. So we're looking at that. Now, as far as nitrates, that would be folded in, I believe, in the ocean discharge discussion, just with, urban runoff, then any kind of local agricultural inputs, and certainly municipal wastewater inputs. And, it relates nitrates is within that human disturbance framework, I think, in the ocean plan. You know, it's certainly is an issue of question of stimulating, you know, algal growth and things like that. So I'll take a step back and say there's two processes that have gone in parallel. One's ahead of the other on the freshwater nitrate endpoints for aquatic life protection, known as numeric nutrient, wait, is that right? NNE, nutrient endpoints, right? Right, numeric nutrient endpoints. So the freshwater component is further along. There's an estuarine NNE process that has made a lot of progress. It's informing the Bay Delta discussions on appropriate nitrate endpoints that aren't the human health endpoint that you hear a lot about in terms of drinking water, the 10 milligram per liter nitrate as nitrogen endpoint. The NNE endpoints for nitrogen that stimulate algal growth and other deleterious impacts tend to be about an order of magnitude lower, more like 1 to 0.5, depending on, you know, the technical study and receiving water type of, you know, is it a eutrophic system, is it a oligotrophic system? So that's, but that's not ocean. So that, I point that out to Dr. Hunter's point is, to my knowledge, the ocean impacts of nitrate aren't a high item of discussion, but those other ones are.
Well, let me add that my specific interest and discussion related to the Morro Bay estuary, which we know is also a national estuary, and I was informed that there are no nitrate metrics for discharge from stormwater or any or from the creeks into the Morro Bay estuary. It is a marine protected area, but it's for, believe it's protected for duck hunting. Mm-hmm. So we know what's, we know that estuary is threatened by many different sources. So this would be an issue, I hope, you know, you could take back to that discussion. That
actually, I mean, I'm just so you know, I mean, that is part of the estuarine NNE process. Morro Bay is one. You know, it's basically any enclosed bay or estuary in the state of California is included in that very technical process, and it's being led by SCWRP, S-C-C-W-R-P, which I can never remember what it stands for.
Coastal Water Research Project.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Southern California Science Organization.
Right. Yes. We're aware.
We have the North. Yeah. Northern California is the San Francisco Estuary Institute, and then Southern California is SCWRP.
Yeah.
Well, they do great work and very careful, and a lot of good stakeholder input into their work. So, that is the home of the eventual range of endpoints that will be considered for in a place like the Morro Bay National Estuarine Reserve.
And just to finish with one last statement, the Morro Bay is actually, I believe, the only state estuary. It was part of their process for getting that national designation. So I hope it's on the list. Thank you.
Of course. Okay, and then finally, I'll wrap up with more sort of the good news thing in legislation. We were pleased at the State Water Board that Senator Gene Fuller took us up on our request to introduce legislation to extend the RUST program, which is, you know, day-to-day kind of program, but important, and there was a looming deadline on the replacing, removing, or upgrading underground storage tanks. And so she carried that. She's from Kern County, and she helped us out. And then it was passed unanimously on the Senate floor on Tuesday. So that program will continue and be in there sort of humming along, making sure that we can take care of sites that, you know, we don't have any other way to deal with. And thank you for your time and great questions today.
Thank you. Any other questions? Dr. Wolf.
Yeah, that's not a question, but a comment. I want to thank you for your presentations, which consistently have good breadth and depth in the topic. And I think we all appreciate, you know, getting a little more of a technical information of what is happening in this big, wild, wide world called the Sacramento Water Board.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I think it's important for our organization and how we function. Thank you.
Thank you. Just want to go backwards a little bit. We have an additional report by a Water Board member. So this is agenda item 4 that we did take up yesterday. But I understand, Mr. Johnston, you have some additional information to share with us?
Yes. Late in yesterday's meeting, I realized that I had neglected something I had intended to include in my board member report. I was talking late in the day with Mike Thomas, and it suddenly hit me that I had meant to include that in my report. And that's this. I've been sitting in on the Governor's Drinking Water Stakeholders Group and really looking at the question of how we deal with, in the short and medium term, provision of safe drinking water to disadvantaged communities located in unincorporated areas that are impacted by nitrate in the drinking water. And along those lines, I met with Salinas Valley Grower Shipper organization to talk to them about helping with outreach in cooperation with environmental justice folks to folks who are identified as impacted in terms of their domestic wells. And I was interested in this because from my experience working organizing farm workers, I know that a lot of these folks live on and get their water from wells on farms, on property owned by farmers, and I know how hard it is to get access to talk to people without the cooperation of the farmers. And while I've kind of been doing this and really in my role as a longtime agricultural worker advocate, certainly I can't ignore the fact that I sit on this board. So before I talked with Grower Shipper, I checked in with our interim executive officer, Ken, and with Jessica, our counsel, just to make sure that I wasn't messing anything up. And I was advised that since the purpose of my discussion was not to talk about the cooperative monitoring program, that actually even if it had been to talk about the cooperative monitoring program, it probably would not have required disclosure as an ex parte communication, because we've already ruled on the ag waiver. It's not before us or pending or impending before us. But in the interest of transparency, I still want to put this out. As I said, I told Grower Shipper at the start of the discussion I didn't really want to talk about the cooperative monitoring program, just to get them thinking about working with environmental justice folks on the outreach to individuals impacted by nitrate in their drinking water. My impression off the discussion was, first of all, I found that they were thinking along the same lines of wanting to figure out how to play a role in making that outreach happen. Second, it's obviously fraught with pitfalls to get environmental justice folks and ag working together. It's a complicated relationship, I think, to say the least. And third, while I thought we had a good discussion, essentially Grower Shippers has been intensely focused on perfecting their cooperative monitoring program, and so this is something I think we're going to circle back around to later. But I just wanted to kind of put that out there so that board members and the public know about that discussion.
Thank you very much.